you are not going to have success if you turn over players consistently. It's just not going to happen.
I think England just have to be, again, spot on, word perfect, win 80% of the aerial battles, 50-50 balls on the floor, shut down that line out.
The Twickenham crowd is a hair trigger. Yeah. They are ready to go after this team if they don't start well and keep going well. And that will be a negative. That'll be an issue for them because that gets in on teams.
England beat Ireland on the weekend. We've had a great season. I mean, because it's, what a scalp.
Into the final moments, Alex Payne trying to keep this side going forward. Haskell takes it on now with just relentless chat, largely about himself. And there's Tindall to add the finishing touch of glamour and World Cup winning stories and a slightly sideways nose. That is how you podcast. A dominant display by the good, the bad and the rugby.
Hello, Dream Team. Welcome along to this week's episode of The Good, The Bad and The Rugby. Hope you're well. In partnership, as always, with our very good friends at Continental Tyres. No Tins and no Hass this week, so we have raised the rugby IQ with two of my learned friends from yesteryear. Shane Horgan and Will Greenwood, very nice to see you. Shaggy squared, might say.
We had an argument in 05, didn't we, about...
You could have it.
You're welcome.
Yours, both had the same nickname. Yours was because of Scooby-Doo.
Yes.
Because you look like...
Yeah, I had curtains, classic. Yeah. Durham University,
didn't we all?
Curtains, red cords, that sort of stuff.
Yeah,
and that and cowardly as well.
Right, yeah.
Top of the list.
Smoking a lot of weed as well.
Come on, ask you why you were. University days as well.
No, it wasn't. It was. Do you know? I never had it growing up, and then of all people, David Humphreys, the new high performance director in IRFU. I was on a combined provinces game to play South Africa in. Maybe it's 98 or 99. Well, maybe
the big one.
The big one. It was such a big one for me. And I was, you know, it was my late teens, so I was properly scruffy and I was like always half asleep. And then I was Shaggy and that was it. Yeah. And I never liked it.
Right. You were always quite boho back in the day, weren't you? You were quite thespy at times. There was a lot of sort of ruche collars going on in your dress sense. No,
And that's the only way that I have anything in that line at all.
Yeah. Very nice to have you both in. We are going to get very stuck into England-Ireland this weekend. We'll have a look at the other fixtures as well. But before we get into sort of what is to come, how do you reflect on games against Ireland? I've got stats in front of me here. Will Greenwood played 5, won 3, lost 2. And Shane was involved in both of them.
Shane will have clearly some opinions about those games. I think 0-1.
That was fun.
I remember very few games. I remember the ones I lost, and I was lucky enough to play an England team. We didn't lose that many games.
Yeah.
Ireland were front and centre, and a couple of games we got turned over in Paris, front and centre. And they're the ones that you never want to go back and play again, but they just niggle away at you a little bit. 0-1, Lions. 4 games, crushed everyone, winning by 50 points, foot and mouth, appropriately cancelled. Lions takes place. I'm one of the 4 or 5, snap all ankle ligaments, don't play in any tests, destroys my summer. 2 or 3 others came back, and we actually had a massive lesson. We went with, and I hope this is taken in the context of looking back at it, we went with players who weren't 100% fit. And you went round the back there, Keith round the back of the line out, scored, got stuck. It was like being stuck in a washing machine. Couldn't get anything right. Few different combinations. No warm-up game. Remember, these guys had gone up to Murrayfield,
got destroyed
in their first away game. We went to Ireland, and it was one of those games that what just happened there. Wow, we've walked into something. And so I'll always look back at that one and just go, we got preparation wrong. We got selection wrong. We had a little bit of misfortune. I'll always view that if we played in March, in the form we were in, my version of events would be we would have won a slam, but that's not how it played out.
I remember that. What I remember most from that game is being so incredibly nervous before it because Jason Robinson was against me on the other side, and it only happened to me twice in my career where I rang up a coach. I rang up Matt Williams, who's my coach in Leinster, and who I now work with actually in Ireland, and said, "You know, what am I going to do with this guy?"
Because you should have rung me. We didn't have a clue either.
Because it was, and the other one was Lomu when I played against Lomu.
Who did you ring? to ask that question?
Matty Williams.
You rang Matt Williams?
Yeah, because actually, so we were coming from Ireland where there was no, do you remember when there was no defensive system? Do you remember
that? Yeah, just turn up and have a go.
He would just tackle, you know, and then Matt came over from the Waratahs and implemented a defensive system. And we were like, this is sorcery, you know, this guy is.
Well, witchcraft is this?
Oh, yeah, what is this? You know, and it was phenomenal. So, you know, he was, from in my mind, a guru, you know, so I rang him up. But it was because I thought, playing against Jason Robbins, it wasn't just that, you know, we might lose. It's that he could humiliate you in such a way that you might never play rugby for Ireland again.
Right.
Honestly, and Lowy was the same. That's why they could end careers.
More so on the wing.
Yeah. In the centre, you can sort of hide and go, well, you didn't drift, I drifted, what were you doing then? There might be a collective responsibility. Yeah. Okay, on your own.
I've drifted past the sideline a couple of times. Keep on going. But he said the same thing to me in both circumstances, which is like sort of maybe damning with faint praise. He said, there's nothing you can do if they get the ball. Just don't let them get the ball.
Brilliant.
Yeah, it's not a bad plan.
Who did you find harder to handle, Robinson or Lomu?
Robinson didn't play that well that day, actually, bizarrely, you know. And he's, for me, he was like an absolute phenomenon. That's two best wingers I ever played against. You didn't get the ball particularly wide, so it wasn't that big.
He had a bag in it. We were poor that day, really poor. Yeah. They thoroughly deserved to win. Crowd go crazy. Festa scores.
Great try.
Everything we try goes wrong. It was a little bit like Murrayfield for England in the second half. You just, even the good sides, you get caught on days like that.
Was it Dan Luger that was through and Stringer?
Tap tackle that was.
That was the game.
That's up there with tackles I remember. I saw Jamie Roberts recently against you lot. You ran an inside play and Tommy Bowes in under from a scrum play, and I have no idea. He was like, who was the character in Matrix who could bend?
Neo.
He was like, I don't know how he made that tackle. So you remember certain tackles, Josh Lucy's tackle on Matty Rogers.
Lucy on De Villiers in the corner.
Benny Cohen on the All Black fullback who was running up the left-hand side. Ben Blair. Just you remember certain instances, but Stringers, absolutely. Yeah. One key moment in a game.
Yeah,
we scored then.
I don't think we would have won if you'd have scored then.
And then 2004, we had...
That was post World Cup, wasn't
it? Yeah, and this conversation might open up to current England team, and because I don't have as much of a footprint in today, I'm coming in here tough on issues, soft on people. Don't push me for names. Don't push me for who you drop. But I'm going to come in here with themes.
Yep.
I do stand by the fact that in 2003, that night, maybe it would have been a bit cruel that night, but 3 or 4 weeks later, Clive could have come to 4 or 5 of us, and by the way, I'm front and centre here, and go, thanks, dude. Heck of an innings, but just Jono's walked, you know, clever geezer's gone, and he could probably get another 4 years. You, I think you got 6 more weeks in you. You're done, son. And it was because I was someone who was always couldn't believe a skinny guy was playing for England. I was always going to keep turning up if you keep getting picked. I should never have been picked again. I look back on it and go, my old man spotted it. He said, your legs have gone, haven't you? About middle of 2004.
What were you doing on the Lions in 2005?
That's what I was going to say, as a test line in 2005.
Oh, yeah. My God. Well, everyone was dead by that stage, weren't they?
I was sitting on the bench, put me in.
That was an interesting selection, that 2005. I thought Dallas was going to play.
I think there was a real loyalty. But actually, I think there are definite parallels between that sort of match in 2004 and somewhat. It's a little bit unfair to that team because that team were like, generational, phenomenal team.
Yeah.
But I don't know if you agree, but you weren't, and I said this in the paper at the weekend, I don't think you guys were at your peak at that World Cup. I think you were at your peak slightly before. I
thought probably 2001, better. Actually, that
you know,
March.
You know, slightly before. Now, you were obviously good enough to win the World Cup, but I don't think you were at your maximal as a team. And then that's why the collapse happened really quickly afterwards.
And if you want to write a book on collapsing, send England on a tour to New Zealand and Australia, like playing European Cup, like everyone else would have been doing a week after the World Cup final.
Yeah. Yeah.
Then go into Six Nations where absolutely everyone wants to come and bat you and go, World Cup, World Champions, whatever, we'll have you. And got turned over by France over at their place, nearly got humbled over there, had a good second half comeback that stopped a 30-pointer. And you guys probably in the end won relatively comfortable. Benny Cohen scored at left-hand side, double movement, bang, gone, disallowed. And then Dempsey scored.
Yeah, Dempsey's
at the left, we were chasing shadows back end of the second half. You were dancing to a different beat, young, enthusiastic, hungry. And we were slightly shell-shocked. And that was the first time we'd lost. I mean, massive credit. First time we'd lost since 99.
Yeah.
Twickenham, we've gone 5 years and rolled everyone.
But I think if you look at the England team, you're holding the England team now, Borthwick, for right or wrong, you know, it should be a new development cycle, right? And instead he said, I'm going to get through the World Cup with the players that we have there and play this more sort of pragmatic way. Can't change things up. I actually think that's fair enough. Do you know, maybe he made the right decision there, but it means that he's got more to do. And he has to do it during the Six Nations. And they're kind of, you know, he has to make significant changes.
Yeah.
And they haven't bedded in. And it's really early in the development cycle. Your team in 2004 were holding on and actually should have started a new development cycle, I'd say, and they didn't. And, you know, were compromised as a result. And you contrast that to Ireland. So our Ireland team at that time were young lads coming off the back of a World Cup. All right, we only got to like a quarter final, as every Irish team has done, but actually we were on the upward curve and we were comfortable and we were ambitious and you know, sort of passionate, and it sort of made sense that we were going on the way up. And the Irish team now are just completely comfortable, having had a disastrous World Cup, but it wasn't the end of a cycle for them. Yeah. If you look at the age profile of the players, it wasn't their last hurrah that they had to get to that milestone. It was kind of mid-career. And they've just moved on seamlessly as a result.
Three quick stories from 05, whilst you're here. One, we always thought we were 05 Lions. Oh my God, the intelligence levels of the Irish backs on that. There was Hickey and Darcy, yourself. It took the chat at the back of the bus to a different level for some of our English players who moved further forward. Who wrote the learned friends to that. Two, I don't think we can say what Steve Walsh called you against Taranaki. So Steve Walsh was running the touch.
I remember that.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah,
Steve Walsh
was
running the touch. Of course, we were away.
What did he call you?
Playing Taranaki. We called him the C-bomb.
Yeah.
In the game.
I appealed for a line out, I think.
He
obviously had something in his head, not just about me, but about Lions, because he was, you know.
The bloke was 2 yards in touch, Jack. I was stood next to you, I was on the inside. You go in touch, and he goes, you can't say that to me, you C-bomb. Like, whoa, aren't you an international referee?
Yeah, it was.
Is it not he who controls himself controls the game on the inside of the forearm? It's
tattooed.
My other favourite one was, I actually, my last pass in international rugby was a try-scoring pass. To who?
Who was it? Let me think.
Got it.
Dougie Howlett.
No. Rico Gear. But it was meant to be to you.
Yeah.
Because you were on the left-hand side. I've got to, what a show-off, saying his last pass in international. You know, I knew Ronan was a friend. Do you know how I knew he was a friend? Because he chased him. And there's no way. I mean, remember that Cast game when he made an intercept against Cast for Leinster?
Yeah.
And he's got a 50-yard start and he hits the 22 and he hit the greatest travelator I've ever seen. Watching him chasing Rico under the post at Eden Park was, Rod, you know what? I remember you trying for me.
What was the back line that finished that third test for the British and Irish? No,
I know the midfield. Slowest international midfield to ever take the field of rugby.
Yeah.
Because it was me, Ronan O'Gara and Stephen Jones. Was it? 10, 12, 13. I mean, wow.
Great days.
Quato was on the right wing.
Yeah.
Or maybe I came on for him.
You were on the left because I was trying to pass it to you.
I'd come around, I think. Right. Was it Jordan? I think Jordan Murphy played 15 that day.
Jordan? Yeah. Yeah. Oh, no, I'll tell you. Yeah, he would have ended up 15.
Yeah. That was a hell of a tour.
Don't know how we didn't win.
Yeah. Unlucky, I think, is
Conrad
the key
Smith's
word.
First cap.
How have we got into this terrible...
Don't know. We digress.
I wanted to talk about Steve Walsh because I've never told that story.
What I want, because we're going to get into the game itself. Just quickly, reflection of 06 and the one to try.
Yeah, it was... That
is boy zone stuff,
yeah, it
isn't
is. It? It was incredible. I can't overstate how brilliant that was. And 06 and 07, only brilliant memories against England. The last game there was rubbish, but... It has shaped my life, actually, I would say. And that's not another statement.
Was special in 07.
Yeah, those. So, you know, I said it to you. If it happened to me once, someone was asking me for advice about, a successful career in rugby, if you're Irish. Score 2 tries against England, then you're boxed off. That's all you have to do. So it actually impacted my life. So allowed me, I think, a platform to sort of, you know, work in media afterwards as well, which is, you know, I'm sort of very grateful to. So, but when I think about when I was growing up as a child and you're recreating moments.
Yeah.
You're recreating moments. Score tries in the last minute against England for a triple crown.
At full stretch.
At full stretch, yeah. You know. And I had, the memories I had in my mind growing up were, you know, you would have had the famous try that Ginger McLaughlin scored against Ireland. We was carried on. And I remember
Mick Galway, 93.
And I always remember the crowd coming in and being part of it as well. And then for that try in 2006, O'Gara jumped on me, you know, and we were rolling around. And I was still panicking whether I was in. I didn't know. I said, like, because you're holding something back.
Yeah.
Because, you know, if that's taken away, you're just destroyed. But it was like a boyhood, the total boyhood dream. My brother tells a great story about it as well. We only used to get two tickets for, you know, away games. Couldn't get them. Like, so my mum and dad obviously had them. And Mark had managed to scrounge another ticket. And he was sitting, you know, right just in front of where that try was scored. And he had become friends with, you know, an Irish couple who were English-Irish, you know, so they were first generation, I'd say. And he was talking a bit them through the whole game. And, you know, he was nervous the whole way, but chatting away, and then scored the try and up, and they're all screaming and going crazy. And then he said, "That's my brother." And he's not sure if they thought he was just a loon that was playing with this try scorer.
Everyone's a brother.
Yeah. But they were hugging the final whistle. They were hugging each other, and he left them with, "That's my brother," and they went into, you know, never to speak again.
Amazing.
But anyway, so there was that.
And Croke Park, for many different reasons,
was sort of social history in Ireland as well. That's what I felt. And think about it, we lost that. We should have won a Grand Slam that year. Oh my God, we should have won a Grand Slam.
How do you lose to France?
Yeah, lost to France. The last kick of the game, you know, it was shocking. But it was a circumstance where I don't know what the options for us were if we lost against England in that game.
Yeah.
I honestly don't know. And it's funny, when you remove the option to lose, you win. And
I was always careful of saying that, because on the day I watched it, I was into Jimmy Nesbitt that day.
Oh, that's a good man to be with.
Brilliant. Well, not if Ireland are battering England, because he's not shy of telling you how shit we are if he batters us. Every time England loses, he'll literally drop a note and go, "Has there been some rugby today?"
He's fun.
But I totally agree with that. But it was dangerous for an English person to say that, because I wasn't sure. I just didn't feel, sensing before that game, when the anthems, and they were beautifully respected. There had been talk of potential the anthems not being respected.
Yeah.
You as a team were not allowed to leave that stadium beaten. And you could sense that. I was watching, you could sense that before.
Yeah, it was definitely the case. And I often think about sort of the social pressure that comes with rugby countries like New Zealand and South Africa. They're the only ones actually that have that history of success forever. The expectation that they win every single game. And I do think that serves, you know, it's something that's passed on to teams. Like, you know, obviously the team of, you know, this year has no connection to the team of, you know, 50 years ago, but they do, because society pushes them to not accept defeat. So that was the kind of only taste of that kind of thing we've ever had. So when you've got nowhere to go, sometimes you just have to win. So, but I was telling Tom before I came in, I should have been sent off in that game. There was a... and this is what I reflect on this quite a bit, because it would have been, again, totally changed my life if it had gone the other way. So David Strattle
scored, didn't he? Didn't
he scored, yeah. He was playing opposite me, and the ball was chipped in, and I was so pumped up. And I kind of forearm smashed him, and he didn't go down, but it was the linesman was right there. And now with, you know, reviews and everything, you'd be 100% gone. And so I always feel as now as a commentator, I do say, I can see when people make idiotic decisions on the field. I kind of have some sympathy, because the attention that's involved, you just sometimes you make bad decisions. It's like when they go to the death zone in Everest, you know, when there's not enough oxygen. And people start making really bad decisions. That's what it felt like for me. And I made this terrible decision. And like almost my sort of life flashed before me in a second. And the touch judge was there. But I can't remember the touch judge's name, but I'm certain.
Wasn't Steve Walsh.
No, it was not Steve Walsh. But he was retiring, right, at the end. That was the last game he was ever doing. And before the game, he'd come in and he asked Brian, to sign a shirt, and Brian was like, "No problem, any lads, get over here."
So oh, whoa, honestly, English objection.
Wow,
the judge is a fanboy having a crush before the game.
Before the game, I mean, and so you had the situation with that, and then you had the fact that are you going to send off an Irishman in that game? But then, you know, can imagine if I had been sent, I would have been an absolute pariah, an absolute pariah, and that would have changed my life.
Instead, you scored a try, one by 50, and here we are now.
Sliding doors moment.
Yeah, here you go.
Perhaps we could get the referee, assistant referee's TMO into the England changing room with a signed shirt and a Sharpie on Saturday. That does lead us on to this weekend. And interestingly, because, and forgive me for saying, growing up watching England-Ireland fixtures, it always felt like Ireland were there to spoil England's party, is what the fixture was for many, many years. It's obviously flipped around significantly now, and it sort of feels this weekend like it's England's job to spoil Ireland's party. You've watched
my dad dad finally got, I think that was the game that got him sacked eventually as England coach.
Right.
He had a fullback. So what year would it have been? It must be 85, right? Odd year, we're at your place.
Yeah.
Yeah, 85.
Triple crown year for
Triple crown year. It was my old man's last game.
Yeah.
Had a fullback who, not sure remain nameless, I can't actually remember now. My old man always says, someone says, oh yeah, that fullback dropped a couple that cost you your job. He said, well, technically, I think you have to touch the ball to drop it. Jonathan Davies scored a high up and under at Arms Park, and then my old man, and then he got charged. Chris Martin, then he got charged down at your place. And it's one of those old ones. I'm sort of 12 years old, 13, and just think it's all great. And I'm just watching my dad come home at the weekend, sinking into a hole, realising the tap on the shoulder is going to come at any moment. So I remember there was always a moment in 2003 when we won, where I got accused of being a fraction arrogant.
You put the ball down in the corner.
Ball down in the corner.
Why was that?
But a couple of things. But one, I pointed straight to the crowd. I was like, oh, look at him, show putting. I was like, Dad, that's for 85. And a bit naff, but my old man had lost his job at that place and had been sort of booed out of town, and that was it. And I sort of went back then. We'd been beaten in 2001. I was like, oh God, I've got to win here some stage to try and sort of balance the books. A fraction.
I was really lucky that I kept on missing the games that Ireland got hockeyed in by England at that period. Yeah,
was that hamstring and old Will Carling M25 syndrome? Not away from home.
My first cap was in 2000. It was the catalyst from my first cap and five other changes the next week. First game was in Twickenham, put 40 points on Ireland, and Ireland were lucky to get zero, whatever it was. And so I missed that, then came in, we had we had success. And then the Grand Slam game.
Yeah.
Oh, it was
2002 was a kicking as well.
Yeah, I missed that one.
Right.
And then I missed the...
Did you miss 2003? Yeah, because Kevin Maggs was...
I missed those.
Kevin Maggs and Brown were centre.
Yeah.
And that nutter from London Irish, Bishop.
Justin Bishop.
Yeah, Justin Bishop, yeah.
Tyrone played in that as well, I think, didn't he?
Yeah, he may have played in that.
Lovely dance down memory lane.
Yeah. This is quite self-indulgent.
No, it's great. People will love this because it is a fixture with extraordinary, not just sort of significance, but history. And there's a lot that goes on between these two. And I think this Saturday will be another.
But you're right. The context for this game has changed a little bit, because that was always the context. It was Irish massive underdogs.
Yeah.
And can we spoil the party? And a lot of it, those games where you guys were going for Grand Slams, and we weren't.
Yeah.
So that was the case. And you were always favourites, and that tag sat well. I actually think sort of Borthwick does himself and England a disservice by talking about, like, for example, last weekend, we're the underdogs. What England team shouldn't be an underdog to the Six Nations to anyone. They shouldn't. And now Ireland...
Thank you for saying that, because, by the way, if I say that, I get shot.
But it's true.
I couldn't agree with you more.
Yeah. But if you look at the development of the Irish team, we were always underdogs, and we felt comfortable in underdogs. But do you know what? It's really self-indulgent to, give yourself the tag of underdogs, because ultimately it means you're losing more games than you're winning, or you're not expecting to win the big games. You're not expected to win those big games. I don't think that's a good position to have for a team or a sort of mindset. So what Ireland are now is undoubtedly something that doesn't sit well with Irish teams or Irish sort of society, is you've got a team that are now consistently, the favourites.
Yeah.
And it would be sort of churlish. Ireland are going for the second Grand Slam. You can't pretend that you're not favourites. So you just have to deal with being favourites.
Yeah. Crown sits easy on their head. Now, it doesn't mean they'll necessarily win the back-to-back Grand Slams, but you watch Ireland turn up at stadiums and the way they play, there is no talk of fear, of nerves. They look, to a man, so comfortable in everything they're doing. So comfortable.
Yeah. But I think that took a very long time to get to that position.
Yes.
And it's only just there now.
I loved your line that you gave us the other day, which is, it's not just the actor that knows his own lines or their own lines, it's the actor who knows everybody's lines. And Ireland just seemed to be this machine at the moment in which every cog is working in perfect harmony.
Can I just ask super quickly what the mood was post-World Cup and how long before they just moved on and went, well, crack on, we've got a great team?
This is the thing. I expected a bit more of a hangover. If you look at what's gone on with France, we could do another two shows about what's gone off and fallen off an absolute cliff. I think it's clear that the expectation of that French team was 100% that we're going to win the World Cup, and this was our only opportunity to do it. It was our whole World Cup, and it's gone. And it's, you know, and will never be repeated. And they're still, in some way, whether coaches or players or a bit of both, they're wallowing in that and haven't been able to break loose, and it's affected performance. And I, you know, to a lesser degree, I kind of know, I've seen that happen before, because it happened with us in 2007 going into 2008. 2007, our expectation was we were going to do very well in that World Cup. We had a disaster, and we had missed an opportunity. We knew that there wasn't another 4 years, actually. And for the vast majority of people on that, it ended up not being another 4 years. That was it. And that brought... that was brought into the next Six Nations, and we had a terrible Six Nations, lost three. So that's where France are. With Ireland, I don't think it was as acutely bad, because I know it was out in the quarterfinal, but it was against New Zealand, right? Yeah. So just historically, we talk about Ireland being favourites or being, you know, or being underdog. You know, somewhere in the psyche, it's acceptable to lose to New Zealand in a World Cup, right? For almost anyone apart from South Africa. Yeah. Right, you can sort of get away with that. So I don't think they had that. They saw, oh, this was totally ripped out of our grasp. Interestingly, I think maybe in 2 years' time they might go, especially if the success continues, they might go, actually, that was our chance.
Yeah.
But right now they haven't held that. And Sexton did sort of a favor to everyone. His last departing gift was, you know, he has this quote: "We lost, but we won."
Yeah. Right,
because of the experience they all had, and there's got a connection with fans and everything. And I think that got the players through to where they are now. Now, I don't believe that, actually. I think they lost and they lost. They lost a big opportunity, and things like the line-out went wrong, which they must regret forever. So maybe the difference between them winning that World Cup, because it was a big opportunity. But they haven't carried the emotional baggage on, there didn't seem to be a huge amount of emotional baggage from it. They got rid of it pretty quickly.
I wonder also, you talk about loss, but one, that engagement with the fans and Zombie, it sort of lifted the team into a new realm of connection between themselves and their supporter base, which is something that England at the moment are really searching for, underlined a few times over. Without sort of throwing questions, cut me your cake on England right now. What are you seeing? What is frustrating? What progress is there for you? And we're going for a deep reach into the notebook.
I had a couple of ideas that I've scribbled down and I'm sort of coming on here. I don't want to come on here and pour a load of petrol on and go, get rid of him, get rid of that. What they're doing is a complete shambles. I'm trying to be 2024, let's see the positives, let's look at the issue, what's going on. The top of my list is, I don't think, this isn't any... I don't think the balance of the side is right, particularly in the pack. I've always felt in the pack, I mean, the fact that Ireland, the entire pack can all catch, carry, pass, handle is great.
Yeah.
I think every pack really has to have a space hunters and space fillers. You have to have four lads who can bend over and push and leap and just do set piece metronomically well, and huge authority in the set piece. And then you have to have four lads who can play a bit. Because otherwise, in the modern game, you can't get yourself out of a hole.
Yep.
If you get stuck behind, you can't chase a game, you can't play. I think England have become so focused on trying to fix defence and trying to fix set piece that they've got a pack that is just slightly skewed in terms of lads who are tremendously impressively strong at their skill set, which is scrum and line out. But then... what's the point of being amazing at that if once you've got the ball, you can't actually do a huge amount with it.
Yeah.
So you could actually have an argument for every single one of those players in the England pack playing, but with a different combination. I hope I'm making sense.
Yeah, absolutely perfect
on
sense,
that.
Yeah.
So we're winning loads of ball, we're hitting our metrics, we're hitting our data. But the point is, once you get, it's the old thing, once you, like Mike Tyson, once you get a slap in the face, you lose the ability to stay in control. And I think that's where England are. They start well. They've got a history of starting well and getting 7 points, 10 points. But the second you stop them on the gain line, I think their ability to play their way out is tough. Then you move on to a question, and it shot me up when I'm bored here. Data versus feel.
Yep.
And you look at understanding, well, the data says you don't run it from here because, again, but that limits your ability to be threatening, look threatening, even if you are going to kick it. I would expect everyone to play with pace and with tempo. From restarts, we go straight into box. I watch Ireland play from a restart. They never kick straight off. Bang, they go midfield. Occasionally they get a half nibble, playing out the back. Or they get hit middle, get stopped. They split their kickers low left. Crowley and Frawley, I get confused. But yeah. Crowley right, split kick off, go. Forces wingers to come up. England always go lock, bang, in the corner. One ruck, kick. I mean, I'm not asking you to run it to expect to score a try.
But to ask a question,
a little bit, and look as though you're going to play. The tall nature of our scrum halves walking towards a ruck tells the entire opposition that even if it was on, they wouldn't run it. Attack the ball. You might still box kick it, but get there quick and look like you're getting quick. And I did have one more, which was just interesting. Just choice of mindset. So can't remember the minute. Right-hand side, Italy, halfway line scrum. Right. So if I gave you an international scrum on the right-hand side now at 42 years old, you get Dricker, you go right-hand side. I know, and the Italians defend with their scrum half in the boot, so they don't even use him as the first one. They sit in the back and he goes, if I set you halfway line, right-hand side scrum, as a centre who scored umpteen tries, what's going through your head?
You would want to get all the backs against a limited number of backs for Italy.
And you get excited, right? Mm. You get excited, go, here we go. Pass to Henry Slater.
Oh, yeah, sorry. There's no expectation you would do anything other than move the ball wide.
Oh, yeah.
That's a given.
Yeah,
that's,
you're going to play, yeah, right? Yeah, yeah, yeah. You're going to, like, here we go. This is it. I've been waiting all year. I've been picked for England. I've got a right-hand side scrum or a left-hand side scrum. We go, yeah, here we go. They drop it to Henry Slater. He kicks it. He just go, no. What's that? And it sort of showed it again. I'm going into the minutiae a little bit. It just says the mindset of what then people are playing against. And as a player, off the top line out, first line out against Scotland, Ben Earl, he only just gets across the gunner, but he's still relatively quick ball, bang, straight back to forward, in the pocket, cross kick. Now, we won the ball back, but it was a tap ball, it was a 50-50 ball, and it's just how your mind is. So my view would be, with talk about space hunters, space fellas, I think there are a variety of lads in that England team who probably want to play a little bit more,
yeah.
But it's not part of the game plan. And there are those who don't want to play a little bit more, who just want to stick to the game plan. So the problem is you're then stuck in a hole. Because even if it then shows itself and the opportunity's there, half the lads are going to go, no, we don't do this. So I'm then hesitant to set off because I'm going, if I go, is anyone going to follow me? And then you really are stuck in a little bit of a hole. So my point would be, if you pick players and you've got Dingwall in there and players like that, give him first receiver role. Get him go at the line off that wide right scrum. Get Slade on his outside. Drop 40 around the back. Don't know who was on the wing on the right hand side at that time. Freeman would have been floating in and around.
Yeah.
It just feels as though they are stuck on with an attitude that makes it really difficult for them when they need to turn it on to be able to turn it on.
It feels like they don't have a philosophy of their own. They haven't established what the philosophy is. Now, maybe we're seeing the start of a new philosophy. We saw a slightly more progressive play against Scotland. We don't know if they'll continue that. You know, I think it's, if they don't continue it, I think it can be damaging. If they go, actually, let's just retreat a little bit for this game so we get over this game. That's what the problem is. That together with, instead of having an overall philosophy that is England's, they've got players, and it's what can this player do for England? What type of player is he? And then we'll build out this week what's best around that. So we've got some big bull carrying Sanders. Got to use them. We got a big number eight. Let's get him off the back. But it's and that changes week to week depending on whose selection is. That's what it feels like. Instead of, this is our identity. This is what we're trying to do. And now you can build your identity based on the type of players that you have, right? That's, you don't just go, here's an identity and then try and put a peg in a square hole. You go, these are the type of players I have, right? This is the right philosophy for this type of players. And that may be more or less progressive. And then you go after that. And that is it. And you have a coach who inspires you to deliver that, and you have the team buy in from it. And that's why I was kind of, one of the issues was, you've got players talking about, we think we should be playing this new different type of way, and we've had a word with the coach. It's like, what? Like, no. It's like the coach should be saying it's the way we are playing, and you should be buying into that. And if you don't have that as a starting point, I think you're in big trouble.
But so the best teams you were part of were coach sort of set the philosophy and then the players determined it, because there were times that they were sort of saying,
the phrase was coach driven, player led.
Yeah, right. So you're not, okay. I'm not excluding, I'm not saying we don't hear from the players. Like, listen, what happens is you have the best coaches do this, right? They have a general sort of idea of the type of rugby that they want to play, right? They then go and see what players they have. And they will do a version of whatever, philosophy they can based on the type of players. With those players, they will talk about their players. What you would do is you find about, I think you maybe need 5 or 6 lieutenants or advocates, right, for what you want to do. And the best coaches ever coached me did that. They were smart enough to go in, these guys are the key people that are going to deliver this. He doesn't then have to sell in what they're doing, because those players will sell it in for you. If you have advocates on in the key areas, the key lines across the field, that's what you do.
Can I ask again? I mean, I listened to a Radio 5 Live interview before. What was our second game?
Wales at Twickenham.
And Martin Johnson was on. And I think Mark Chapman was doing it. And he said, England have talked this week about expressing themselves, Martin.
You can already feel it's coming.
It was. I rang him up straight away. I was crying with laughter. I go, you just wanted to spew. He goes, he doesn't understand what. So my view would be that would be as an older guard. When you hear, if you heard an opponent says, "Oh, we really want to express ourselves this week,"
honestly, do you know what it is? I think it is charlatan behaviour. Right? It's horseshit. Right? Because if you look at Ireland now, Ireland look like a very sort of progressive, evolved team where they're throwing the ball around right now, and that's only in the last little while. That comes from a real strict, rigid philosophy and game plan that's established that gives the options that people take. But there is it is counterintuitive. The more sort of structured you are, the more unstructured play you can have and the more decision-making you can have. But this idea of expressing yourself, you have to have a system in place, right? Expressing yourself is making decisions, right? Making the right decisions. That's what expressing yourself is. It's not like, I get the ball here on a whim. I decide to do something crazy and like, because, I want to express myself as a rugby player. That's a nonsense.
You have a system
in place. You are. That's not to say you don't take the right option. The right option could be a hitch kick around the corner, take this guy on the outside, or it could be a flick in behind the back. It could be any of those things. But it's based on a framework that allows you to make decisions based on what's in front of you.
And you can't. The issue I have is you can't try and have a connection with the fans by saying we're going to express ourselves, and then against Scotland be 9 points down with 8 minutes to go and go to box kick routine. It's just a totally contradictory. And then the fans start to go, well, I don't get, what are you telling me? And if you're trying to make that, I know it's not about the fans winning the game, but I think you mentioned that's that sort of disconnect at the start between players and fans at the moment. And you're in danger of over-promising and under-delivering.
And are you using the term, expressing yourselves? Is it being used incorrectly interchangeable with ambition? Because ambition is something else. And every team needs ambition. And the best teams have the most ambition. And you spoke about that's how Ireland exit their defensive zones now with the options always through, especially if it's Ireland on the right. They almost always have a look to see if they want to move it. Sorry, left to right, all the way left to right. It's always an option there. So that ambition is important. That's expressing yourself if you want to use that, not like an individual on a whim doing something silly.
And if you go to the detail there, if England then go, right, we know they're going to exit with low, let's put four on that side. Well, they'll just run it up the right and score 8 metres up the right-hand side. That's by having that mindset of yes, we've got our parameters, we understand where we'd like to exit from, we exit on the front foot, we try and force people forward, then kick in behind. By having all these options of look, and then having the actual ability that if it is on in your own 22, you go for it. That's what manipulates D's, and that England just don't seem to be doing at the moment by not exploring. And if you don't trust the ability to look after the own ball, look after your own ball for two or three phases in your own 22 before you kick, then you're just inviting pressure.
By their own admission, English rugby is, in inverted commas, in transition at the moment. That's what the narrative is coming out of the camp. They are trying things. They've implemented a new defence. They've got new coaches, new players, etc. What you're saying makes it sound very muddled. And I think a lot of supporters would probably say that what they're watching appears very muddled. Can you see what they are trying to do as a path of progress from this? Or are you worried that the narrative and what you're seeing in selection, you're seeing in game plan, means that you're just going to keep going around the roundabout for quite some time?
If I start with the initial point, let's start with some optimism. And says, so can I see? Yes, I can see. Let's put the framework in place first. I know there's been a small, I don't think it's been a spat. I think Ben Young said something about they're not doing enough reps in attack.
Attack, yeah.
And the players
actually,
have come
Johnny
out.
May so said the same thing
we're
last week.
We're doing enough. So I sort of get the easier things to fix, which you alluded to, which you've got to pick those players in that World Cup. And the reality is they found themselves in the semi-final. They found themselves 15-6 up with 10 minutes to go. It's really difficult to argue with that. And England fans are like, we had them. So you go set piece and you go things that you can fix quickly and defence. And so from that perspective, I can absolutely see that. The problem that it comes with is the expectation as other fans, Ireland are so blooming good. We've got France away. We can't win a Calcutta Cup to save our life. That those slow baby steps for a union like England, which however much they might argue about lack of money and time together, that's a tough debate to win. To say, oh no, we haven't got enough time together. We haven't got enough players. You know, they're still in a 5-star luxury hotel at the Penny Hill Park. They still travel.
It's not about English everything. Rugby.
We did see, you know, a different type of player, a development of the attacking philosophy against Scotland. So what happens now against Ireland, as I said at the start? Do you pull back or do you keep on going and hope you can get, you know, it works?
So answer the question. What do you think England should do this weekend?
You can't be is half pregnant.
Right.
That's the big problem. You can't be half pregnant. So I don't know how far they've gone on the path. There's two conversations here. One is in defence. They've had 2 weeks now, either side of the Scotland game. They should have made really significant progress in defence in that time.
If you go with the same personnel.
Well, true. You know, or, but either way, there to some degree there should be, there should be significant improvements. There will be a philosophy of the team. They'll be more aware. There'll be rep numbers. And it's the easier side of the ball to make progress on. The more difficult one is the attacking side of things. And the problem with the attacking side of things, it's actually also your defensive side. Because if you start dropping ball, putting ball down, then you start, you know, absolutely leaking points as well. So. I think it'll depend on how confident he is in what the process that he has started.
You mentioned very briefly, there's a real snippet as to the All Blacks game, where it went, line out. The only way you can beat Ireland is deny them the line out.
Right.
They win line out with their bounce out plays and so much of it. And again, I watch all Ireland's games, but I don't watch as many of your Leinster games as of course you do. But I see, if they control the line out and they control the touchline, they're a little bit like watching Manchester City against Manchester United yesterday. United go up with an absolute screamer, Rashford. And then it's 85% possession. They control the ball. They control the tempo of the game. Gibson Park is an extraordinary, fabulous rugby player to understand when to run, when to kick. But he attacks every ruck as though everything's high tempo and then even might slow it down. And if they control the tempo and the drumbeat of the game, then England are done. So, yeah, I think that's at the very core. How do you beat Ireland? I mean, you've got to kick your goals. You've got to then score the tries. But you've got to, whoever's in charge of line-out, which I think is Steve himself, is it? has to find a way to limit them to 65, 70% success rate. And if they do that, they've got half.
That's
half
not impossible.
Wow.
That's not impossible. That's not impossible because this Irish line-out isn't where... It's the one area of slight vulnerability that... And the problem is with line-out, if people think you have a vulnerable line-out, you have a vulnerable line-out.
Right.
Because the way people... attack it is different. Like you, people think you have a flawless line out. They're sitting on the ground. They're actually not even throwing numbers up because they're more worried about you getting rolled over the mall. They're worried about how fast they can get off the back of the line out to stop you damaging the midfield. So they're not contesting. But, you know.
So do you think England will go hard
on it? Oh, I think they'll go massively hard on it. They were going to see numbers up all over the place. And that could have a bearing on selection potentially as well. But you will see that Ireland. End of the Six Nations last year wasn't perfect. Pre-World Cup games, it was raised, oh, we have an issue here. In the World Cup, it cost us.
Yeah.
It was the thing that cost us. And, you know, that was sort of the frustration that we come out the other end of the World Cup when it really matters and we didn't deliver. We come out against Italy and have France, perfect line out. Italy, perfect line out. But, you know, even Paul O'Connell said against France, they were a number down. They're missing their best line-out jumper in Wilmansa. We're against then Italy. Italy weren't as contesting as they might be. Against Wales, it was going all right. Wheels started to come off a little bit in the second half. England are going to be all over it. Yeah,
Itoje, Chess and Martin, well, all three of them will play and start. They'll pick six foot five lads. They'll pick them at 2-4 and at the tail. And they'll just get as many of them up in the air as and they'll risk the fact that they absolutely, Ireland control the touchline, Ireland batters.
So that means it's more than just that. That means also it changes how England might kick because they may kick the ball out or kick the ball to Ireland and let Ireland kick it out more often than they normally would. So the question is here, is this an ultra... a specific game plan to beat Ireland, or is it continuing on the path of development for a bigger prize somewhere else? I think it'll be very specific to Ireland.
Totally. I mean, because it's what a scalp.
Yeah.
You beat the best team in the world. I mean, you talk about what you were saying
that
before, Shade,
Steve, the rest
about
of the year.
Your career made to beat this Ireland team now. Remember, they went to New Zealand. Can't ignore what happened in the World Cup. But I think they're 11 out of 11 on the spin in the Six Nations. In the Six Nations, what they did in New Zealand, I mean, list on one finger the amount of teams that have won a Test series in New Zealand. And having lost the first, you did lose the first, right, didn't you? I mean, having lost the first, which they should have won, and you think, oh, that's going to kill them, and they come back. So, England fans, England beat Ireland on the weekend. We've had a great season. And it's got to that stage.
Hasn't that narrative changed from 15 years ago?
They have to find a win quick because Shane alluded, maybe before the Scotland game, the next 10 tests were 3 against New Zealand, 1 against South Africa, 1 away in France, 1 away in Scotland, 2 Japan games. We have those. Australia at home. Well, you know, I mean, I know Joe Schmidt's turning up. Who beat the Crusaders on the weekend? The Waratahs. So they've got a few players coming through. You're thinking, we've got 3 gimmies there. Gimmies, that's balls, isn't it?
Wow. That's coming out in November. Can I ask you, it's very, very interesting about the tactics that are going to be employed. One of the things that seems to be a really hot talking point around England at the moment is this, I was going to say consistency, it's actually inconsistency in selection, particularly in the centre combination. I'm fascinated in your view on that. Very quickly before that, pop quiz questions. The most successful England centre partnership, I'm just looking down there, of all time is...
Guscott and Carling?
I mean, I don't know what he said.
You can say
if I say
it.
Me,
you can say,
like what a tosser.
Greenwood and Tindall.
Was it?
19 matches together, 17 wins, 89%, the best in Britain and Ireland.
Tindall was good, man.
It had to be, didn't he? Yeah.
You had to say that, sitting in the seat. Most successful Ireland centre combination of all time?
Ewan Dricko?
No.
Darcy and Dricko?
I only played a couple of times in the centre. I tell you... Mags and Dricker would have been good for
Aki
a while.
Henshaw? Aki Ringrose?
Well, how many games?
Wait, more than 5.
Ringrose?
Might be. Because Dricker had so many games.
Who did Mike Gibson play with? They didn't win them all in those days, did they?
That's going way back. No, the answer is O'Driscoll and Horgan.
Was it?
7 matches, 6 wins, 86%.
Oh.
Darcy and O'Driscoll were 56 starts and 64%
win ratio.
Thank
you for bringing up that stat. That's really made
my day. There's a little feather in your media cap. You will put that on
the... Should have spent more time in the centre.
Yeah.
I wasted out on that bloody wing, wasn't I?
Yeah. So what that leads on to is obviously the consistency for you and Tins, and actually Mike Cat as well, who can... Yeah. The three of you were an amazing combination.
He was better than both of us.
But when you dig into England in recent years, so this is the last World Cup cycle. Yeah. Ireland, 41 games, 10 centre combinations, 83% win ratio. Okay, so 10 combinations in 41 games. Scotland, 44 games, 12 combinations, 59% win ratio. Wales, 45 games, 21 combinations, 36% win ratio. And England, 45 and 19. So they've tried 19 different centre combinations in 45 games, which is essentially 1-2. They are changing their game at 53% win ratio. What is the question? The question is, how can you build a team...
With great difficulty.
Right, full stop. Is that part of the problem then? Is that you? Because actually, you said England haven't got enough players. They've almost got too many players, and they've got 10 different clubs, all of whom are championing their own players. They've got options every time something goes wrong to change things. Does there need to be an attempt to try and build something for the long term, or can English rugby just not afford to do that because of the external noise and pressure?
So it then comes back to a little bit. So let's take, who should we take? Fraser Dingwall, particular. Enjoy watching Fraser Dingwall play. He's only played two times and got dropped because, of course, they brought the power back of Ollie Lawrence. The thing is, I think a lot of those centres have had it. A lot of them are decent centres.
Yeah.
But they've all tried to play him in a Manu or an Ollie Lawrence way. So they've all ended up just being a slightly worse version of the people they really wanted to pick because of the style they really wanted to play.
Yeah.
As opposed to, I'm going to pick you for what you can do rather than force a round peg in a square hole. Because if Fraser Dingwall never plays for England again, he'll go, I never really got to play like I played.
Yeah.
So it goes back to the philosophy of what do you want from a centre? And by the way, if you haven't got that availability, then by my perspective, you've got to find a different way to play with the lads that you've got. I don't know if I'm answering your question.
Do you know the other thing that's really, really important, and I think this is understated and people don't speak about it, is... If you have the centre for me is incredibly crucial to the overall style the team is going to play. Because if you do not have a big presence at centre, the ball doesn't get out there, right? They actually, it will be dominated by the pack, the 10, you know, maybe even first centre, right? You need somebody out there that is saying, this ball should be coming out here, or we should have options to move the ball wide. I want to play in this game. I'm not standing here as a passenger cleaning out rooks and carrying ball. I'm actually going to play rugby, to the point that you said about getting excited about the play. And if you do not have someone who's established and has played and can be very demanding, then that doesn't happen. And that was the thing. I was absolutely blessed with having Brian O'Driscoll in centre for Ireland and for Leinster, because we knew Brian was by far our best player. And so forth, we had to develop a game plan, whatever the other players we had, get the ball to him and good things are going to happen. And or even use him as a decoy, but it's going out in his sort of direction. And I would say same for you. You know, you blush, but you were, you know, a very sort of, you know, confident, established player who, you know, would move the ball as well. And you're not going to stand out there and wait for, you know, a forward pack, as dominant as your forward pack were, to go, listen, you can have the ball the whole time. You're like, actually, we're getting in on this as well. England don't have anyone of that stature almost anywhere across the back line.
Right. So this is the sort of question. I'm trying to find ways for England to get themselves a sort of... The questions you've thrown around identity and philosophy and, you know, how do they build something or fast-track something in the current situation they're in? Or is this just going to take... I mean, the danger is it's just going to be more tinkering and more tinkering and more tinkering. Results are going to pile up against them. We're going to have more questions and greater pressure.
It's why
less confidence
this week,
within
the squad. Is Marcus back, fit and available?
Yes. And Alex Mitchell.
But Mitchell.
But then you're back into spinning the wheel again.
Well, are they spinning the wheel or are they picking the team you wanted to pick? And you might say, well,
injured. But look at what Ollie Lawrence... Look at the challenge Ollie Lawrence had in having not played rugby for 6 weeks and getting stuck straight into a Calcutta Cup game. Marcus Smith hasn't played in 6 weeks. You're now asking him to go up against the best team in the world for a team that is low on confidence, a crowd that is ready to throw its tomatoes and say, get out there and win us a game. I mean, it's... Is that a reasonable decision to make?
I'm trying to work out where else you go.
I know.
I mean, the Ollie Lawrence selection, it's a tough ask, right? For that style of player to come back in and like dominate having not played. The reality is where England might say they've been a little unlucky is if Manu had been fit, he'd have 130 caps and he'd played all of them. You might say, well, that's the way he played. So I'm not trying to find, having said the most amount of players, we've got stuck on a style that we go, he is at his best so successful at what he does that we keep trying to clone him or find a version of his style to play. And we found one with Ollie, who's also has been reasonably susceptible to injuries.
By the way, just on that, like the best England, you know, have played in the last 10 years wasn't with that type of centre, although I think he may have played outside centre, is with two first receivers in Ford and Farrell when they were at their best at the World Cup in 2019. That was the best, that semi-final, I know harp on about it the whole time, some of the best rugby I've ever seen any team play. And that was with two first receivers attacking the line in the sort of Matt Gitto type mold for Australia. They did it so well 4 years before, actually, and got them to a World Cup semi-final with a kind of an average enough side as well.
And you add on the tip on there in that game, specifically on the game, that first Carl Sinclair little tip on, Courtney Laws in off the top, but back to the forwards of the balance of playing and having that ambition, not expression, having that ambition to play. I'm super strong and you've always got to have two first receivers, but right. I've almost given up shouting because they just don't pick them or will always go back to and default, go back to that balance of space hunters, space fillers. In your back line, you need three lads who are really comfortable playing fly half.
Right.
You really do. Who can just drop into that first. And George tried, Furbank tried it a little at Scotland, which was great to see.
But you know, that your point, I agree with you. And it's interesting, we were speaking just before we came on here. If you look at someone like Bundy Aki, who came into Ireland, he's your power. He is your Ollie Lawrence. You know, he is your power man. Get you over the gain line, recycle. Passing isn't great, but like, it doesn't matter. He has, and maybe this is a product of Ireland not having as many players, and maybe he would have been turfed out under the other circumstances because his passing, especially left to right, was very average. He has upskilled unbelievably because I think he's gone, right, this philosophy, the way Ireland are playing, is bigger than me, and I'm going to be left behind here unless I work on this area of the game. And of course, you know, he still has that power game, which is, you know, he looks more powerful than ever, actually. But he has the ability to drop the ball off and pass the ball while moving forward, which makes him, as he is at the moment, feels like at times unplayable.
Yeah, and this, you talk about stability and selection. I mean, one of the best upskilled centres in the past 15, 20 years is Mar Nonu, who came on to the scene as a 21-year-old guy, I'm going to rip your head off and I'll run over you. And by the end of it, in the World Cup in 2015, he's throwing missed passes, offloading out the back door for that wonder try. He scores one, he's got balance, he's got an outside break as well, which buys into your point of why has there not been more stability in selection. I think England would have had more stability in selection in the midfield, but for Manu being so injured so often,
right,
and therefore chasing and chasing and chasing, and when people don't deliver on it, let's try and find the next version.
And also waiting for him because, you know, yeah, you couldn't really draw a line under him, could you?
No.
You
but this is the really interesting stat. In the Tuolangi era, so he made his debut 2011, didn't he? So what have we had, 13 years of it? England have used 47 different centre combinations around Manu. He started with 12 different centres from Mike Tindall, would you believe, through to Joe Marchant. I mean, I don't know what the answer is, but perhaps there's something in the challenge.
I'm assuming, by the way, that the rest of the England team haven't had that much change. So, you know, when I say, because that could be a data point that's actually relevant, because the back three might have changed as many times.
Yes.
Has England just continually chased for the past 10 years across the team?
But funny enough, it leads, and I'm not sure this is necessarily the show to do it, but what you have got in Ireland is four provinces, which enables combinations to spend a lot more time together. In Scotland, you've only got two. Whether trying to pick an international team now where time is of the premium and combinations are, as we've begun to see here, Ireland's 10 centre combinations with an 83% win ratio, do you need to find a way for English players to spend more time playing together? So you pull the teams out of Europe and you put in four super regions or something like that, where you've suddenly got six more games for English.
Well, I don't think that's realistic. I don't think it's going to happen. Well,
right.
Where it can happen,
that was like on the back of the bus in 05 when I came up with the political idea.
Yeah, exactly.
Just shut up. That's not going to happen.
No. Shut up and make the tea. No, right. Okay, thanks, Shane.
It's
weird. You're
thanks
fool.
For coming
idiot.
On.
Idiot.
I hope you enjoy your last gig here.
Said Nietzsche with his rouge collar and his smoking pipe.
So the issue is that consistency or that sort of familiarity can be bred through consistency of selection, and that's where it has to be. That's what we looked at. Ireland, are you right? We are lucky in that we have, you know, our system was set up with four provinces. That was sort of organically there.
Yeah,
it's about right for the amount of Ireland talent Ireland has, and it also does two things. It means that players play together a lot, and you look at almost the whole Leinster team, or you know, you could take them out and they could play the whole Irish, you know, it could be the whole Irish side. But also then, even when they get into Ireland, they're, you know, consistently playing and they're familiar. And, you know, you'll know that the sort of stats on this, and it's often quoted, is that Australia team that won the World Cup in 91 and 99, especially the 91 team, I think, you know, there was maybe three teams involved in that, or there were bulk suppliers to it.
Yeah.
And that sort of cohesion is what's really important. So you are not going to have success if you turn over players consistently. It's just not going to happen. Yeah.
There's very small silver lining to people losing their jobs and career and clubs going under. I totally agree. If we ended up with eight, I think we're starting to get to a space where each one of those can be strong. You can play in units and combinations, and it's easier to make these changes, knowing that you're playing together a lot more often. But it's not going to be a popular thing to say, chop it to eight.
No. Will Greenwood. We'll just ask them that and clip it up. Will Greenwood says, chop it to eight. Let's bring back the divisional championship or something like that. Okay.
Trim it, a better word than chop, isn't it?
Select it.
Curate
it to eight. Curate the eight. There you go. Can we just bang the drum on how it might? I mean, you spoke about Croke Park. Defeat is not an option. How did England find something on Saturday, which is fire, brimstone, fury, and a win?
Yeah, again, I mean, I think if you edited three games, you'd find a decent 80 minutes in it. And so it's therefore, it's there. And how consistently can they put those passages of play together? I think what it's going to be really key is the Scotland game, 10-0 up, real control, and just the first phase, 7-pointer, the wide ball, Tuipulotu gets to the outside of George, Ollie's like, as George got to him, steps in, Slade's gone on the blitz, on the out, no, this is my man, and the new systems that working, as the new system works, which is the interesting about half pregnant, is have they got that ability to go, this is a really threatening Ireland time. There are times now when we are going to blitz. And you might say, no, if you're blitzing, you're blitzing the whole time. I think a good side finds a way to go, we don't have to blitz all the time. And you go, well...
Then there's doubt.
But there'd be really interesting systems to put in place. I just think that 7 points that they gave to Scotland when the game was starting to have real control, Scotland were as bad as they'd been. Would that be fair to say first 20 minutes? First 19 minutes. They scored in 19 minutes, 50 seconds. Bad as they've been. They couldn't get out, kept dropping balls, and we then caught it from them. But that 7 points that they gave out. And then when Duane van der Merwe scores that wonder try from a turnover, they pressed again. Don't press on turnovers. For his hat trick, we get bust up the middle. We've got a narrow defence. We press again. And it's just, I mean, Finn Russell had a 3,500 square metres he could have put it in. If you pause the video as Finn kicks, half the team are pressing and then a couple of lads who are going, we shouldn't be pressing here, a corner flagging, and it's like a defence coach's nightmare when you've got two lads running one way and two lads running the other. So you're right, maybe, and that's why you've got to be patient with what's going on. But I do think, and I don't think it's a case of half pregnant, I think there are real times when we go, lads, we are all in here. Bang. But there are moments in the game against Ireland where you think, I would say to them, okay, it's 38 minutes on the clock and England are winning 10-3 and Ireland have a scrum on the left-hand side, right, just before half-time. You might go, no, keep going, keep blitzing. I might go, I'm on the cautious side here. Let's get to half-time at 10-3 up. Let's have some unsettlement. Let's just go for a nice square press, do what they want to do, and Bun Love, and you go, you can't. I think good players should be able to understand when we keep going and we keep going and keep going, and then there are times when this is not the right time for a relatively new system to go all in against a great team.
Interesting. But there's a few things that are going to be easy wins for England. Like, I know Ireland had a good scrum game against Wales, but you know, it's not an area necessarily that you would, you know, hang your hat on for Ireland. It's, you know, traditionally an area that England could perform in. So set piece dominant. We've already spoken about the line out. It'd be a significant piece. Go after Ireland in the air. You know, I'm not suggesting there's a massive vulnerability there, but
England have been quite good.
England have been quite good. I'm not sure if it's going to be Frawley or not a fullback. It may still be. He's good, but he's only played one Six Nations game, so it's potentially they're missing Mike Hansen as well. There is the pressure we've seen Ireland can't or they tend to overplay when there's a huge amount of pressure and they can't get into the system they want off multi-phase. They can get knocked behind the game line, and that's where your point is really smart as well, that you don't double blitz under those. Get the blitz, get them behind the game line, fan out. What are you going to do, guys? You're going to overplay. They can get yourself into trouble again, because Ireland don't have a brilliant kicking game in the middle third. Don't have a great offensive kicking game. So sort of lean into that and make them play phases and potentially phases behind the game line and keep your system. And then the other thing, Ireland have an excellent exit strategy, but there is a good chance they can get blocked down. So you can see who their kickers are. They use low massively, his left foot boot. You send a shooter on low. He's vulnerable, if not hit behind the gain line. He's a little bit slow in the way he kicks through. You get a block down. Crowley as well has been blocked down a couple of times. He's a little bit slow, and sometimes he gets a bit too flat to kick the ball away. All of a sudden, you know, you've got opportunities. Stop dropping the ball. I know that sounds crazy, but like, actually, you limit your...
I hear that on Sundays in Richmond Park.
You know, if you limit your errors offensively as well, that keeps you in the game. What else happens? You know,
just on that,
someone gets sent off, someone gets a yellow card, changes the perspective of the game. This is a game that's, you know, for England, it's not like a slam dunk for Ireland.
Yeah, sympathy. How do you stop people dropping? Give people early touches on where they want. Understand that. I think there was one which came off Ben Earl's shoulder that Slade was going out the back. We knew we were going out the back. There's no need to be that tight to Henry on the short there. And it's just give you... Don't let perfect get in the way of good.
Right.
In the first 15, 20 minutes. You don't have to go all the way to the line and pull off the perfect play. Your set piece play is great, fine, go for it. Stretch the limits. Right on the edge, because you have to break a first phase defender. But in phase play, don't be afraid of a slightly earlier ball. And giving everyone that opportunity to play and get involved and get their first touch in. I mean, the reality is we're not reinventing the wheel here.
Yeah.
We're just trying to make sure. I think England would hope, if they had one thing that every fan would want, it: can England be in the game at half time?
Give yourself a chance to win the game. That's what they need to do.
Totally.
Box clever. Two questions on Ireland. How worried are you about this game out of 10? Honest answer.
My predisposition is to be really worried about all games, but you know, even going into that, and the great example of that is going into that French game. I thought, you know, so this is a game Ireland shouldn't be winning. It's, you know, it's against France. And down in the south of France, and you kind of I'm hardwired to be sort of you know,
negative.
It is, and I've got those scars there. You know, I brought them through with me, and then I think it becomes, you know, more difficult again in Twickenham. But I do think Ireland will win the game. I think they're favourites. They're right to be favourites. I think, you know, you could see one or two Englands. You know, if we saw an England, the amount of mistakes that we saw against Scotland, you see the Twickenham crowd getting on top of them, which
I think
you're right. I think the Twickenham crowd is a hair trigger.
Yeah.
They are ready to go after this team if they don't start well and keep going well. And that will be a negative. That'll be an issue for them, because that gets in on teams. So if that becomes a factor, then, you know, Ireland are very, very comfortable delivering their game plan. They don't make a huge amount of errors.
Comfortable chasing if England go 10, 17, 6
They don't chase, actually. They don't chase.
They just
let it go. They just let it go, and next thing, all of a sudden, they're back in the game, because they can continue to do what they, you know, what they've planned to do, and they generally take the right options. That can be disrupted. Now, it can be disrupted. I mean, Ireland have been disrupted by a couple of teams, but generally, you know, they are the most comfortable, most professional Ireland team there's ever been.
Yeah, and talk about chasing. I mean, we know in 2019 they went, I mean, it was 29-0. There's no way you can chase from 29-0 against New Zealand in the quarterfinal. I brought the notes I'd made from the quarterfinal. And you forget Ireland went 13-0 down. They were 13-0 down to the All Blacks in this quarterfinal. Yeah. Again, slow start. I don't know if it's the pressure. It's like the All Blacks and a couple of lineouts went awry early on. Emotion, a couple of daft penalties got off ahead of it. It's the All Blacks, but they found a way to fight them well back in. And when is it? 16. Keller gets held up over the line on the 69th minute. Geordie Barrett. I mean, geez, are you kidding me? The All Blacks win a scrum pen with seven men, but Ireland are back in it at 25-24. It was all Ireland. In the second half, and that won't help them to think about it like that because they go, how did we?
Yeah.
But in terms of comfortable chasing, what I see there is you're in a World Cup quarterfinal, 13-0 down to the All Blacks. The proof is in the pudding. I said, well, shut up, they lost. They got themselves back into a game where most teams just collapse and fold and walk away. I think they can chase. I think England just have to be, again, spot on, word perfect, win 80% of the aerial battles, 50-50 balls on the floor, shut down that line out and explore a little bit with the ball. I know I'm not saying mixed messages, win the aerial battle, but you have to look as though you're going to play at times. You have to try and raise the tempo at times. If we just go, I'm not saying park the bus, but if we just go data, this is what we do, I think Ireland find a way to win.
Just looking at the overall tournament this year, and we were muttering about this before we started recording, have Ireland raised the bar or have the others dropped the bar?
Yeah, well, you know, 80, this is what you have to say. It has to be if Ireland are doing well, it has to be everybody else who are doing well.
France have fallen off a cliff. Off a cliff. I mean, they could end up bottom. Wales beat them.
Do you know, there's a stat.
Wales beat them.
France were 100-1 for the wooden spoon. And I mean, you say Wales beat them. I mean, that leaves them France, England, in the last round, which is
what we play for.
Yeah, what sooner?
Let's come to that next week, shall we?
I think Ireland have been extremely consistent. They've built on last year. Last year was, you know, a very good Six Nations in preparation of the World Cup. You know, they won the Grand Slam. They're the team that has held their form, and they've held their form at a very high level.
Yeah.
And the changes that they've made. You couldn't say Crowley has made the team better because it's Sexton, but he hasn't made it discernibly worse.
Joe McCarthy
has made the team better.
And what a man off the field as well.
Yeah, he is
a great,
very interesting guy. But
yeah,
McCarthy and Byrne is a combo.
Yeah.
There's not a lot they can't. You might say, well, let's have a go at them in the line, which England will do. But you're looking at their skill sets.
That's another string to the bow. That, like, he is a massive second row in the sort of the stature, physical stature that Ireland don't produce. We produce a different type of second row, and a very good second row. But he is almost like a South African second row, and the way he carries the ball, he's got good footwork, and he's just smashed his way into that team. He's displaced James Ryan and Henderson. Yeah. Henderson was the captain of the Lions, wasn't he, for one of the games, certainly midweek.
Midweeker, yeah.
John Ryan was being spoken about as a potential Lions captain at one point. He's like James Ryan. He hadn't I think he of his first 20 games for Ireland, I think
didn't,
he almost
Leinster,
won everyone.
He didn't lose in the season.
So that hasn't been a change that has, you know, we need to change tactics. That is, I'm coming in, I'm taking over, and that's what he's done. So I think Ireland are continuing to play at a very high level. There has been a drop off in the other teams. Let's see where England are at the weekend. But Wales aren't great. You know, let's see, again, that last game against Scotland, that could be all of a sudden an interesting game. Mm. Italy, that was probably a decent performance for them against Ireland in retrospect, wasn't it? And they looked like they're performing in a reasonable way. France, fell off a cliff, but also I think that first game, Ireland pushed them off the cliff.
Can I just do our Continental Tires question of the week, which comes from Jay Barber 99. They are our sponsor. No. We're a great sponsor. If you spot it, we're going to brand your forehead for the next episode. Haskell's actually changed his name. He's now James Continental for the next 12 months. Jay Barber 99, how many of the England team would get into this current Ireland setup?
So, back line.
Well, Freeman? Which England? You see, this is the difficulty. We don't know what the England team is.
Well, Freeman's going to play.
Okay, pick England players from the smorgasbord of England.
Freeman's going to play. So could Freeman get in front of Nash, who's been only a couple of games and he's looked great, but I'm trying to find...
Yeah.
You know, Jameson Gibson-Park, Crowley at the moment, shoo-ins.
Yeah.
Aki Henshaw.
You know, in a different world, could you see... he's a 10 who's back fit.
Marcus Smith.
You know, what would he be like in an Irish setup? You think?
Yes.
Like, I think he's a remarkable talent. We don't know about Crowley yet. I think he's doing well. Yeah. He's very good. I like a lot about him. Like the way he attacks the line flat. He's got real bottle, which is really important in a 10. And he's done really well. And he could be, we don't know yet. But Marcus Smith, we know, is a very high ceiling as well.
Like, is the question for this Saturday? Because if the question for this Saturday, yes, you have to pick Crowley.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Right.
So
if the game is this Saturday, I think Freeman in that setup would be decent.
Yep. Up front?
Are you picking Nash?
Short answer.
Are you picking the whole Irish backline?
Well, you could certainly make a case for it, couldn't you?
Like, so you would pick
Low, without a doubt.
Yeah.
To be honest with you, any three of the centres you would pick. You know, depends who plays a full back potentially for England and for Ireland. Although I really love Frawley. I think he's a great player.
And Keenan.
If it's Keenan, Keenan's probably, I think, the best
Stuart or Furbank
fullback maybe in the world.
Keenan's best fullback in the world.
Okay,
you
know?
So
Freeman.
Okay,
in right the back line.
Up front.
And then nine. We go through I think we've got two props. We've got two hookers who are phenomenal. But I really like Jamie George as a player. I think he's a brilliant player. But is he better than Dan Sheehan at the moment?
We're just giving you enough rope.
I know this is really killing me.
We're rolling this out someday.
Where's the lever? I want to get out of here. It's not looking great, is it?
No. Chesham, but again, we've just talked about McCarthy and Byrne, and it doesn't get in. Who's our best player? Doris is a world 15 player.
Yeah, but I think Earl is a quality player. I think he's good. Okay. I think Doris is brilliant. You might find a space for Earl maybe in the back row.
Right.
I think he's on the bench.
Yeah.
In the squad.
But like you this is just a snapshot because, you know, looking at Toji for any time in the last X amount of years, you'd go, Toji would be in there. Yeah. But actually, the way Byrne and McCarthy are playing at the moment, you know, they're maybe two of our best players. Yeah. So. Listen, this might be very different in a week's time.
I was going to say, I'm not sure you can pin a podcast to a changing room notice board, but it's that sort of proverbial, listen to what they've said, fellas. It's time to go and make a point.
I've been brought here on
suspicious
circumstances.
You've fallen into the trap.
Yeah,
that's
I've jumped into the boat here.
Two cads have surrounded you like flashmen.
Just to extrapolate that question, how many England players go on a Lions tour tomorrow?
Freeman.
Smith. Marrow.
Smith. Marrow's got a fight for a slot right now. Needs a massive game against these guys. You might say, well, so where else are you looking? I think Beard. I think I know Will Rowland's on the bench, can't get in. He's outstanding, kept out behind Daffy Jenkins. I think Marrow, in all likelihood, goes. It's not an absolute guaranteed trade. If England win three games in the rest of 2024, how do you pick any of them?
I is not a trap.
I'll tell you what,
you got your left foot in one. Do you want to put your right foot in the other?
I'll tell you what this made me think of. When we went down, I think it was 2004, the summer of 2004. No, it was 2004, I think it was. We went down to play the Springboks and we played them down there. And we were kind of in both games, but we lost both games. And Jake White was the coach at the time. And the Springboks were coming to Dublin in the autumn series. And he was asked, you know, rope-a-dope, how many Irish players would get in the team? And he said, I wouldn't have any of the Irish players, which is a kind of legitimate thing to say if you're the coach of the Springboks. And I remember how passionate we were before that game. I don't think I've ever been as riled up before a game. I honestly, whatever it hit, and the way he said it, it just hit a nerve and an emotion that meant that. And we know rugby isn't all about passion, and the modern game certainly isn't all about passion, but it's got a big deal and plays a big part. And I think maybe it's up to 50% of what you need to deliver a performance. And we came out of the blocks like so fired up, like spitting blood.
Yeah.
And we beat them. And so I've just delivered the team talk. Yeah,
well, there you are.
Well, Mitchell goes. Alex Mitchell goes.
Yep.
Ben Earl goes. Another couple of games under his belt. Cunningham South has a sniff.
Your listenership is going to go through the roof with all the England coaches. Lads, you've got to listen to GBR this week.
Yeah, exactly. There's 15, 23 maybe. 16 extra listeners. 16 Englishmen.
I'm bringing it round. Trying to give them some positivity.
Do you know, I love it. It's such a... You've got all the cards in green. You've got a puncher's chance for England.
What's the bookmakers make?
Well,
it?
I
plus
thought
they
were 21 points start, but they've come in, I think, is it? Yeah, it was last week, I think.
That's silly.
That's what Tin said. 12, is it? You said Wales beat France. With conviction.
Yeah, I do. I do. I think France are in a hole right now. If Jalibert, I don't know how bad his knee is. If Jalibert's gone, I don't know where they're going at 10.
Yeah.
Donty's gone.
Yep.
Which gives, he was their real point of difference in the World Cup.
They're missing
certainly the build up to the World Cup.
Yeah.
I think that young Welsh team
at home
at the Principality Stadium will have a little look about what's going on in those boys in blue, and they will keep the tempo high all game. And I think they'll turn them over. I do.
They'll throw a bit of ball. That's what they'll do. That's where they've had their most success. I still think it would be tricky for them, but certainly not impossible. The interesting one is Scotland, Italy.
Go on then.
No, I think Scotland will win, and they should win. But is there something there? You know, is there something there? I'll tell you, it'll be the barometer for the Italian
side.
My
best pump this year was Italy-England game. Italy half-time, England full-time. Yeah. I could see that again.
Really?
Italy half-time, Scotland full-time.
Just to get back to the point you were making about philosophy, England sort of creating a philosophy and then playing up to it. Are you seeing that with Wales? They have sort of made a lot of noise about we're starting again here. Are you seeing something emerge?
They've ripped the Band-Aid and gone, we've got to. So if you then pick up on individual, I think their second row, I've mentioned in terms of Lions content, I think they've got three great second rows, and Daffy Jenkins will grow and grow and grow. Remember, he's 20 years old. Jenkins, Beard and Rowlands, that's a point of difference. Their back row is outstanding.
Yeah.
Wainwright, Rafael and Mann is growing. He's 20 years old, so he's alongside two decent operators. Wainwright is a throwback. And you just think, how is he in the right place at the right time? Just awesomely up there. I think Tomas Williams, I've rated him for donkey's years.
Yeah.
A scrapper. He's not perfect, but he's an absolute scrapper. If Tompkins and North get their game right, there's edges you can find, but they're tough and niggly and high elbows and high knees, and they're a couple of units. I love Dyer's work rate. I think Winnett's come in and gone, punched above his weight, and has looked confident. I mean, you might say he didn't have a lot of choice, but he's looking at the back of the field and we want to put a fire out with him. And he's just moving around. He's got some shape on him. And Adams can score some points. You sort of go through that team and you go, wow. You're suddenly talking positively about a Welsh team. But at the start of the tournament, you're thinking, crikey, who are these kids?
Yeah.
And by having the game time 240 minutes together and a decent 60 minutes against England, when it's like, we've got this, I think they're confident.
I think you're also seeing a mature coach who is comfortable in his own skin and totally
capable
protected.
Of handling the flak.
Totally protected, right?
Yeah.
So he doesn't care, right? So he's gone in. He's, you know, and even before the World Cup, he got rid of some major players, but is totally stripped it out, gone for a totally young side. He said, this is what we're going to do. He stated it. He's comfortable with doing it. And it's the difference between, you know, maybe Borthwick really pulling off the bandage, as you said, or pulling out the plaster, and Gatland being comfortable doing it. It's also the difference between coaching Wales and coaching England. It's different. It's different, like the media attention, the sort of pressure that comes with not the expectation, but you're just given a little bit more. There's very high expectations for Welsh rugby, we all know that, but you know,
there are fewer alternatives.
Exactly. And there's more understanding. Whereas the problem with England is everybody's got an opinion because you've got so many players to choose from. In Ireland, there's never that big a controversy over selection because, you know, here and there around the edges a little bit, that's where where teams would be criticised or coaches would be criticised. Look at the end of Joe Schmidt. It wasn't, Joe, you've got the whole, you know, you've got the selection totally wrong. It's actually you're not doing the right thing with the players you have. That's not the case. You've got two conversations going side by side. You're not doing the right thing and you're not doing with the right players.
Very interesting. That's why we love the Six Nations, isn't it? Just before we finish, it's time for our Haycar Six Nations Selector, where we delve into the past and we try to pick the greatest players to have played in the Six Nations. You'll love this, Will. It's right up your street. Haycar only have the best quality Czech used vehicles you can buy directly online or in person through one of their trusted retailers. They even have vehicles you can't find or buy anywhere else. Like our relationship with Haycar, this game's all about great partnerships, so our picks have to be made in units. Don't look at me quizzically. Go with me on this. You've got to pick on units.
I was thinking, when did you sell out?
Oh, we sold out years ago. But I'm driving around in a roller, so, you know, it works, doesn't it? Bought by Haycar, ironically. Very good, too. We are picking the back three today, and they all have to play together for the same nation. Another kicker. Our team
Six Nations or pre-Six Nations?
No, like all Six Nations. And we have to have a unit from each of the countries, okay? So there are two positional units left to fill, the second row and the back three. We're going to give you the back three for obvious reasons. Although you
are we doing this
you'd
now?
Actually made quite a good second row partnership, the two of you, actually.
Are we doing this now?
Skills-wise. Yes, you're doing it now. Sit up straight and concentrate. So far, we've picked our front row, our back row, our half-backs and our centres. So Le Cicero, Ghiraldini and Castro Giovanni. Great for the after party.
Yeah.
Each of them test insurance. They didn't win a lot, but great unit. Hilbert Dallaglio is our back row. Dupont Untermack were our halfbacks. And I'm afraid Darcy and O'Driscoll got in the centres.
Well, but that's... we've just seen Shudby Horgan in O'Driscoll. You should have given me a stat 10 minutes ago that says he's 6 from 7 with an 88% win rate.
Sorry, Gordon, you're out. It's now Horgan and Darcy in the centres.
Did the 89% win rate not count?
No, it didn't. No. Tins, I think, wasn't able to vote for himself.
Oh.
So that means we can't have any of the following. Noel Watson-Brown, who won the Grand Slam in 2016, or Lucy Robinson and Cohen. Oh, actually, they only started twice together, so you couldn't really have them either. In Ireland, it could have been Hickey, Horgan, Dempsey, 12 starts together, 10 wins. You had some good win ratios, didn't you? We'll get that flashed up next time you're on the telly box. 83% win ratio. Fitzgerald, Bowen, Carney won the 2009 Grand Slam. You can't have them either. And France, Dominici, Clerc and Brusque, 04 Grand Slam.
Villiers-Penot,
Jaminet with the 2022 Grand Slam.
What was the last one? Jaminet, who else?
Villiers-Penot and Jaminet, 22 Grand Slam.
Why couldn't I have...
Because we've already picked Darcy and O'Driscoll in our centres, which mean that you can't pick an Irish back three.
All right.
Because we can't pick an English back Wales three. Or Scotland.
So what's the Wales back three I can pick?
I'm going to give you the options now.
Adams, North and Williams.
2019 Grand Slam, very good. North, Cuthbert and Halfpenny, two championships, 2012 Grand Slam and 2013, 11 from 14 wins. Shane Williams, Mark Jones and Lee Byrne, 2008 Grand Slam. Those are your Wales options.
Do you know what I like? Do you know what I like them? Combined weight, probably 140 kilos.
Yeah, they were good. They were good.
Post-shower.
Mark Jones made me look like Hercules.
Yeah.
from Scotland, you can have Lamont, Patterson or Southall, Hugo Southwell. Highest win percentage as a unit, 4 wins from 9 starts.
Don't laugh. They beat us. They winning the Gold Cup the whole time.
That's
you just,
true.
You just mocked a Scottish back
mock
three.
I didn't mock the jock. I just coughed.
You sniggered. Or you snoddled.
You can have Hogg, Maitland and van der Merwe, the 2021 back three that won at Twickenham for the first time since 1983. So North Cuthbert Halfpenny, Adams, North or Williams, Shane Williams, Mark Jones or Lee Byrne, Lamont Passon, Hugo Southwell or Hogg, Maitland and van der Merwe.
So, do we need a goal kicker? Who's at 10?
Untermack.
Right, in which case we need to. You got to pick. We're picking a team. Considering the other people who've already picked that 9 and 10, you've got to have a goal kicker.
Halfpenny.
So, you've got to pick the back three with Halfpenny in.
Yeah.
If you're not picking a goal kicker and you're saying, it doesn't matter, we score tries, I might go Adams, North, Williams. Cause
are you not giving Untermack the chance to kick goals?
No, he'll miss.
Okay.
Halfpenny wouldn't miss. Untermack could miss.
Yeah.
Halfpenny won't miss.
Although Lee Byrne was real fun as a fullback, wasn't he?
Yeah,
he was a great player.
You make the decision. Are you going to? The pressure is on you.
If I want ballers, I'm going to play
Adams North Williams.
I'd go the Williams one.
Adams North Williams.
Yeah.
Let's go ballers. Let's not die wondering. And that means we're going to have a Scottish second row pairing, which will probably be the
Grey brothers.
Grey brothers. Yeah, we might flex the rules on that, actually. Stay tuned for next week.
What's their win ratio?
I don't know, but it's a lovely family affair, and that's what we're all about. Well done, Adams, North and Williams. They go into our team.
A lot of tries between those three.
Yeah.
And Shane. Crack, how we left Shane? No, we've got to have Shane's one in, haven't we? We've got to have Shane in.
Do you want a late change?
Yeah. Can't have Shane.
What was Shane's one?
Shane with Halfpenny and...
No, Shane with Mark Jones and Lee Byrne, 2008 Grand Slam.
Ooh, yeah, it's tricky.
Oh, is Shane not with the others?
Nope. That was Liam Williams, 2019 Grand Slam.
Yeah.
Or you could have North Cuthbert and Halfpenny from 2012 and 2013 England game as well. That's still, I think, the highest. What watermark? What?
31-3.
North Cuthbert, Halfpenny, the only back three to win two championships.
That's got
to
be it. Right?
And then you get your goalkeeper.
And
you got
the goalkeeper. Yeah, yeah.
So it's the right Josh call. Adams and Liam Williams, you are scrapped. But George, you go through to the next round alongside Alex Cuthbert and Lee Halfpenny. Selecting a car from Heycar is much easier process than we've just been through. They only have the best quality check used vehicles, and you can buy directly online or in person through one of their trusted retailers. Buy your next car the feel-good way with Heycar. Right, you've dug yourself a deep enough hole. We're going to finish with a prediction, please. So we'll do Italy, Scotland first of all. Who and by how many?
Scotland by four.
Maybe slightly more in the end, Scotland, I think.
Okay.
Scotland by 10.
England against
with a bonus point, you were saying. Scotland scoring four.
With a bonus point. So that one available Saturday afternoon, 2:15, ITV and Virgin Media. Saturday at 4:45, ITV and RTE, England against Ireland. Shane, please.
I think it's going to be Ireland by 12.
Will Greenwood.
I think I'd revise that down to 3.
England by 3?
No, Ireland by three.
Why?
I don't know.
You're just giving caveat options here. So
I'm going to revise it down to 3 because, big wins in Twickenham don't happen that often.
France round 4 last year would...
That was so bad, wasn't it?
That is a hangover as well in this round.
2024 is a year of positivity. We've got one big game in us, and I think it's competitive to 60 minutes.
Yeah, that's not the exam question. That's not the exam question. That's here's the question you wanted to ask me, but I have answered.
I think Ireland by 5.
England by 1, just for the sake of it. Yeah. And Wales against France, Sunday afternoon, 3 o'clock, BBC and RTE.
Game of the weekend, no defence. Is the roof on, 44-37 in a jamboree that Wales win.
Swallow your roast beef on that. We've never had this much consideration ever. Can I just say
at
this point,
any chance again, any of these questions with more than like 2 seconds notice during the pod, so you can actually consider it?
So it's a rugby pod. What are you expecting we're going to talk about? It's not exactly breaking news that we're going to ask you what you think is going to happen. Okay. Sorry, Shane, we'll send you a much more detailed brief next week. Please come with some thoughts and views on what might happen this weekend.
On the games that are happening the next week. And also, you made a very compelling case there for Wales. I think that's what's thrown me. And again, it's like my own Ireland. I always default to France winning, but you've convinced me. Right. Wales.
Bye.
To be on the same team.
Seven.
Big game this weekend as well. England against Ireland in the Legends fixture. And would you believe it? No, your old mate Tins is still trucking it up.
Wow.
It's incredible. He loves it. Friday night, the game is at the Stoop. And if you fancy going, you get tickets at quince.co.uk. Do you fancy that? You're quite fit. You're still sort of lithe and busting a gut, aren't you?
Yeah, I run around. I've had too many operations.
It's too expensive to put yourself back together.
That view and a doctor saying count to 10 and never getting past 4, I've said I don't. I'm not that keen anymore.
Really? What was your last one?
Shoulder. 6 of them. So I just no interest.
I hurt my back yesterday.
Did you? Oh,
try to frighten my child in the park. That's the level of fitness that I have at the moment.
And on that bombshell.
Talk us through it. How?
Well, I was hiding behind a bush. He was coming around. I was hiding behind a bush. And I leapt there.
Stretch it out of the playground.
Which counts for you in Bermondsey, somewhere like that.
No, I was in Victoria Park.
If everyone's got footage, please send it.
Isn't that a lovely juxtaposition to the glory of scoring a match-winning try in the 79th minute in the top right corner of Twickenham?
It's a long way down.
Getting wheelchaired out of the park from the soft play area. And on that bombshell, it's been really good fun. I've loved the history. Sorry for the surprises on the predictions. we like to catch you out as we go. Very interesting. It is a puncher's chance, though, isn't it? Could it?
Yeah.
Might it?
Yeah. Look, so you know how you never back against France? This is why I find it difficult. I just go, it's Twickenham. How can we keep going in the game's second favourites at Twickenham? And I just feel there's a massive game.
Yeah.
In there that can. There's absolutely a chance. Absolutely, there's a chance.
Great.
I have a feeling I'm going to be got back. If England win,
it's like if Ireland we'll book win you for next Monday.
If Ireland win, no. If England win, it's like
we'll just replay all the clips that you've.
I'll have to talk to the next podcast. Will be talking through the last podcast
therapy. Well done, fellas. Great fun. Thank you very much indeed. We have been the Good, the Bad and the Rugby in partnership, as always, with our very good friends at Continental Tyre. Stats and facts provided by Oval Insights. We're a Folding Pocket production. This episode was produced by Tom Edwards. Enjoy all that's to come this weekend, and we'll see you for a debrief next week. Bye for now.
You've been listening to The Good, yay, The Bad, and The Rugby, oof, with Alex Payne, James Haskell and Mike Tyndall. Thanks for listening.